Oh, I hope you turned it up real loud to feel that beat, because it's time for DLC, your downloadable commentary for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsor this week, Varonis. My Varonis. They made that possible, bringing DLC to you completely free. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming and its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff, 2N1T Kanata, and I'm joined by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the man who, like the rest of us, wonders if his destiny this week will be waiting in queues on crashed servers while wearing his new iWatch, Christian Spicer. Welcome, Christian.
Thank you. I'm back.
Welcome.
It's good to
back.
Be here. Yeah, last week's show was awful. I don't know what happened. There was MOBA talk. There was Madden.
Did you say awesome? You said awesome, right? Awesome?
Madden 15 talk. It was the best show. Awesome. What did I say?
You said awesome.
That's what I thought I said. It was awesome. Yeah, it was the best show ever. I should. I don't know what I'm doing here.
We're here on the eve of the big Apple launch, dude. What do you want to make some bold predictions? iWatch, iPay, iPad, new iPhone 6. What's going to happen?
Well, there's no bold predictions, right? The iPhone 6 is going to be announced, and they're also going to show the phablet version, and they're going to demo and preview very limited iWatch stuff, but the iWatch won't launch until 2015, where the iPhone 6 will be going on sale September 19th.
What is going to be called iWatch? Going to be called iTime? What's it going to? I want you on the record here. What's it going to look like? Are you going to buy one?
I will likely want to buy one unless I need to upgrade my iPhone, which I really don't want to do. But that's how they'll get me, is if I need that somehow to have them talk to each other. And I think it will be called. That's okay.
iBand.
iBand.
iClock. iBand.
I'm calling iBand. Yep.
iBand. Interesting. That's
iStrap.
That's
Garage Band.
I'm pretty sure iBand is the iPhone ringtone cover band.
it won't be iWatch, though.
We're not talking Apple stuff today. No, we're talking video games. And DLC is your downloadable Kanata, your downloadable Christian. But this week, DLC stands for Designer and Legacy Confirmer. Because we got our old buddy from Shaq News and Weekend Confirmed back here, and he's now designing games. It's Mr. Andrew Yoon. Welcome, Andrew.
Wow, did you actually just come up with that on the spot, or did you write that down? Because that was amazing. I'm blown away with how many times you can make DLC into a different phrase.
Well, I had to do something special because it's our mini reunion.
Oh, yeah. If only we could get Garnett to continue talking about Madden 15 for this week's episode, then it would be complete.
Well, we're glad you're here. We've got a lot of cool stuff to talk about. So let's get right to Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we try to convince one another of the most important stories that happened this week in the world of games. You can contribute stories for us to consider by using the hashtag DLCSOTW on the Twitters or by visiting our subreddit at reddit.com/r/5x5DLC. Got a lot of cool stories to sift through, but Andrew, as our guest, I'm going to give you first pick on your Story of the Week. What do you like?
Personally, I love the Xbox One promo that's going on right now. Getting a free game with Xbox One, it's an amazing deal. And actually, I just love seeing the two big guys go head to head, and really customers win because of this. I just love seeing Microsoft not throw in the towel and be competitive.
Yeah, competition. You're referring to this deal that just started as of this live recording yesterday and goes until September 13th, where if you buy a new Xbox One console, you get any $60 game you want, pretty much.
Including Destiny, right?
I think so as well.
So that is an amazing way for Microsoft to be like, hey, you know, even though they're not legally allowed to promote Destiny because of contracts, it's still a really great, like, subversive way of reminding people, hey, we have Destiny on Xbox One, and sure, you're not going to get all the, like, DLC that's exclusive or whatever, but hey, you can get the game for free, which is a pretty good value proposition, in my opinion.
And you can even double up on the bundles. So if the bundles with Madden 15 or Forza 5, you're getting that game in the box, and they're still going to give you another $60 game. That's pretty rad. The only restriction is that it's not for any downloadable games. So it has to be a boxed disc game. But man, that's pretty cool. You know, obviously, Christian, you're going to say it reeks of desperation.
Why would right? I say that? Why, Jeff, I don't even know. Maybe that's the thing. I miss 1 week and now you don't even need me here. You just fill in my thoughts for me.
It's very true. It's very true.
Man, no. I mean, how is this a bad thing, right? Aside from early adopters being quote unquote burned or whatever, it's a very compelling bundle for people sitting on the fence about an Xbox One. Whether or not this should push you over the edge to buy it or any current gen console, I think is a personal decision. I think if you're not really invested in games or the games space, I would still say no. I don't think there's quite enough out there yet to warrant. I mean, it's still $400, right? Everyone's like, this is, oh my God, they're giving them away. No, they're not. It's still expensive, but this is pretty, it's a pretty good deal. I do think it's funny, like my jib will come from, right, Xbox One announced all digital, and now they're like, you know, we're so far past that. Now it's like, here's this promotion, better be a boxed copy game. Which right. I think is humorous. But dude, that I would probably, if I were doing it, I would probably go for the Forza 5 bundle with the Kinect and pick up Destiny as my free game if I were one of those people that hadn't jumped into this generation yet. I mean, how awesome. Okay, so Jeff, you think this is the best deal ever. How best of a deal do you think it is?
No, I don't think it's the best deal ever. I think it's a bold move from the company in number two place. You know, they're trying to rev up engines, and it's a great time to do it if you've got a big gigantic release of a game coming out that is associated with your competitor. Why not give it to people for free on your system? I mean, that's if people have been waiting to jump into next gen to play Destiny. I happen to be a person who's going to be playing Destiny on PS4, but if I didn't own either of these consoles and I wanted to get a new next generation console for Destiny, I might be considering the one that'll give me Destiny for free. I mean, that's a pretty compelling proposition, and I think it's a bold move of them. I think it's pretty cool. We'll see how it pans out, if they can, you know, gain some ground sales wise because of it.
Prediction time for you guys then. Do you think Microsoft will come with some even crazier Black Friday deal, or do you think that this is arguably the best deal on an Xbox One before 2015?
That's a great question. What do you think, Andrew?
I think there's definitely going to be better deals later on, but at this point, like, do you really want to be on the Destiny bandwagon now, or do you really want to wait until December or November? I think, you know, that's the question you really got to ask yourself.
I mean, I guess you could be playing Destiny on your 360 or PS3, you know, and not miss out.
And get a free upgrade if you buy digital.
Right. Yeah. And even your character transfers over. Is that what I was reading this week?
Yeah, it did on the beta too. It was seamless. It was crazy.
So Christian, what is your story of the week contender?
Well, I think this is good. I think I'm going to take yours. So then you'll be able to free to just list 100 other stories as you do. There's interesting stuff this week, but I think the thing that I found most interesting is the Samsung Gear headset partnership with Oculus, that it's an Oculus-powered thing. And if you don't know anything about this, basically Samsung and Oculus have partnered for a mobile virtual VR headset that's used where the Samsung Galaxy Note 4 is the screen. So, you know, it's like this, the head contraption thingy. And then you slot the Galaxy Note 4 in front of your face. And if you don't know, the Note is it's a phablet thing. So it's a big screen. It doesn't have quite the same viewing angle as the regular Oculus dev kits do, but it's pretty close. It's a little lower, you know, tech or I guess processing power, because the whole thing is the phone, right? There are no cables and stuff like that. I think it's cool. I don't quite know. And Jeff, I don't know if you dove into this story deeper than I did. I don't quite know, like, what is Oculus bringing to the table for this? I mean, because there's no extra software. It's just the note, right? You're basically just hanging a note in front of your face.
Well, no, I mean, it has Oculus tech built into the headset as far as the viewing range. It's not quite Oculus level. They say it's 96 degrees, which is, you know, not 100 degrees like the Oculus. But they're bringing software compatibility, I think, because a lot of the early things that they're offering for this headset are Oculus software. So they're calling this early release the Innovator Edition, which basically means it's a beta, but buy it anyway. And, you know, that's cool. I think you're right that it's a huge deal that it doesn't, that it's a standalone unit and doesn't have any attachments to anything. I think if VR is going to catch on, it kind of has to be that.
Yeah.
And I think this is not going to be the solution. This isn't the thing we've all been waiting for, but it's a cool step in that direction. I don't think it's going to sell very well. I don't think a lot of people are going to want to pull out their phone and then jump into VR, but I like that this momentum is happening, that more companies are buying into VR. VR is a thing, and it's not going away. Every company believes in it. Now, you could say the same thing about 3D. It was a thing for a while, you know. But I'm encouraged by this. I haven't had a chance to try it myself. I want to. But I think it's kind of a cool gimmick at this point, but a gimmick on its way to be something substantial.
It's definitely a view of the future, but it also gives us an idea of how much VR is going to cost in the future, right? If you think about it, the note unlocked and unsubsidized by a phone carrier is probably going to cost $700 to $800, right? And it's still it doesn't provide the same level of performance that Oculus wants with a consumer headset. So I think that just sort of gives you a glimpse of, well, we have to figure out ways of getting VR to people in a cheap way possible. And I think we're going to see a lot of these kinds of experiments before they can figure out a way to really bring that cost down.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but that's what I think is remarkable about this potential solution is that, you know, $800, again, a lot of money, not, you know, change you find under the couch unless you have, I want to live in your house. If you have that kind of change in your couch. But I mean, it's not a $2,000 gaming PC plus a $300 headset that are working in concert together. And I agree with you, Jeff. I don't think people necessarily want to drop their phone or their phablet in front of their face. But I mean, I think if, you know, the Note 7 or the iPad, you know, Grande, or, you know, we get to these things that are
very
powerful. Yeah, Venti, my bad. That are powerful enough. I mean, I do like the idea that your headset isn't just your headset sitting around collecting dust when you're not using it. Like, if I'm using it for smart glass on my Xbox One because it's my tablet, you know what I mean? Or I'm controlling my home because iHome is fully networked or whatever. Or, you know, I'm using it for second screen for my PS4 or whatever. And then when I want to strap on the headset and jump into VR, I slide the same device. I love things that are multiple devices being used, you know, one device for multiple uses. Like, we've all seen that, I'm assuming, that picture that's viral on the internet of like 10 years ago, and it's like, you know, a bulky laptop, a huge camcorder, a Discman or whatever, and then it's like a smartphone today. Like, that's cool. You know, I don't need to carry an iPod and a digital camera. It's all in one device. And I think if we get VR closer to that, that when I'm not VRing, which, yes, that's what we're going to call it. We're going to call it VRing. when we're not VRing in our RV, I'll have this thing that I use for other stuff. And that's what I think is most exciting about this Note 4 usage. But yeah, no, I don't think, like what Andrew said, I don't think anyone should buy this version of it unless you're, you know, you're tax writing it off and your company's paying for it.
Well, I should say this story was submitted on Twitter by @KillerFly, and my favorite VR story this week was actually submitted on the subreddit by Ibicus, I guess is how you pronounce that. And he just posted on the subreddit this video of the Oculus paired with the Leap Motion to create the thing that I've been talking about forever that I wanted the Kinect to be able to do. And actually, several people, after I mentioned that last week or the week before, several people pointed out that I guess the latency, the lag in the Kinect prevents it from working, pairing well with an Oculus because the latency is so much shorter in an Oculus by necessity. But the Elite Motion seems to be able to handle this well. And this video is awesome. If you guys have seen it, I mean, it fully maps hands in front of goggles. I mean, it is a video from the perspective of inside the goggles, and a guy brings his hands in front of it, moves his fingers. Each finger is independently mapped, as the Leap Motion is able to do, and brought into the game. So you don't have this disconnect between looking down at your body and seeing this dead, lifeless, you know, stagnant, stale body. When you're in a VR environment, you can
actually have that disconnect in real life. I look down and I see what my body looks like, and how it looks in my head. I'm ripped. You know what I mean?
Yeah, in your virtual reality, you are much better than when you sadly look down.
Yeah, I take off my VR and I look down. And I'm like, that's where the disconnect happened. When I have the headset on, everything's gravy.
But I think, I mean, I'm so encouraged by this. It's like my weekly VR cheerleader session. I know that people disagree with me stringently. I've gotten their emails and their tweets. People are very skeptical, as they should be, because all these technologies are uncertain and clunky at the moment. But man, we're getting there. We're getting there, baby step by baby step. We are getting to the holodeck that I want. And I'm excited by pairing these different technologies together, what you can do, what kind of verisimilitude you can create inside that VR environment. Either of you guys get a chance to see this?
I watched the video and it looks like it works surprisingly well. Have you demoed Leap technology at all, Jeff or Andrew? Have you guys played with it?
Yeah, I think Leap Motion is really cool. I'm a big believer in VR. I think it's still early days, but yeah, stuff like this, we're getting very slowly closer to what I want from the future of VR.
Yeah, Leap Motion tech is cool. When I demoed it, it was like calibrated a little. GDC 2 years ago, whenever that was. I don't even remember. But it's cool. It's really, really cool tech. I don't know if I want a holodeck future, because I'm not looking forward to living my life afraid of Klingons for forever. But
dude, they become friendly eventually, just one generation later.
Yeah, no. So for my daughter, but for me, it's going to be a life of terror.
Oh man! So if that is not my story of the week, which it might very well be, then first of all, let me say this. I'm very surprised, Christian, that you did not pick this news that Bungie optimized Destiny for remote play on the Vita. Seems like right over the strike zone for you to knock out of the park.
Jeff, you've become my grandma. I love the Vita, I do, but every year for Christmas, you don't need to send me an Astros pin because I'm a fan of the Houston Astros when I was 8. Yeah, I still like the Astros.
It's the one thing I can remember about you.
We'll get to the Vita on what I'm playing, because I'm playing a lot on the Vita. And yes, this optimization is cool. But man, you can't pigeonhole me, bro. I'm not always pessimistic. I'm not always up on the Vita. I am always hating on Nintendo because I'm just kidding. And I'm a Sony fanboy, but you can't just put labels on people. I have my PS4 tattoo on my back now. I covered up. I had them black out my Xbox 360 one and turn it into a PS4 one. But one generation at a time, Jeff.
But how much Destiny are you going to be playing remotely on your Vita? All of it?
Honestly, very little. I think it's cool what they did. But to me, it's still... So you can describe the optimization they did. I mean, unfortunately, it's still not optimized per se, because you're still reliant on the back touch, which isn't a good replacement for shoulder buttons. It's just not.
But that's optimized. I mean, that's using the tech of the machine that you're playing it on. It's as good as they can do. And it's cool that they went that extra mile and made it. Evidently, the quote was that during the open beta, Destiny was the number one remote played game, which is kind of like saying... It's kind of like saying Christmas was the number one holiday during December 25th. You know, it's like, everybody was playing that game. So everybody was playing it however they were playing it. You know, it's kind of an unremarkable thing, but it is cool that they recognized that and took the time to you know, make some controls that work better with Vita when you're doing that.
As someone that plays a lot of remote play, I guess one of the reasons why this story didn't really pop up to me is because a lot of games are actually optimized for remote play. I think I played half of Assassin's Creed 4 via remote play on Vita, and it worked really well. So it's just like, it's sort of an expectation now at this point where I expect games to work on my Vita really well when I'm playing it on, you know, via PS4.
Well, I think, yeah, I wasn't aware that they were doing that so much, but it's cool. It's cool. I'm glad that people are embracing that for the, you know, for the few Vita owners that can take advantage of it. I think it's great. But anyway, so if that VR isn't my story of the week, then I want to go with this one. Did you guys see the story about this crazy person finishing Dark Souls using a Rock Band guitar controller? How nuts. So evidently this guy, Benjamin Beersley Gwynn, he goes by Beersley online, evidently. He created a custom input map for the Rock Band 360 controller to play through all of Dark Souls, which sounds crazy on the face of it. But when you hear the details, it's even weirder because he was forced to use whammy bar. He was forced to use the rocking out tilt power meter detector as an input. And even with all that, he was limited to what he could do. It says his character movement was restricted to forward, backward, and right. And camera control was restricted to panning left. And it also meant he couldn't block or use heavy attacks. So this guy, first of all, finished Dark Souls without blocking or using heavy attacks. And then also couldn't manipulate the camera except for panning it left. The masochistic self-torture is admirable, I suppose. I guess this guy kind of does this with Dark Souls. He also played through the entire game one-handed before this. But I just love the fact that somebody's like, I wonder if I could finish it with the Rock Band controller. Let's do it.
I love
stories like this.
I feel like this guy is almost the equivalent of the dudes that I see at the park with like the world's best dad shirt on, which like seems like a sweet shirt at first blush, but then you realize they're insulting my capabilities as a dad. You know what I mean? Like, oh, you're world's best dad. Well, I'm just chopped liver. And this guy is just calling you a POS Dark Souls player, Jeff. Like, that's what he did.
Well,
he's like, oh, you think the game is
into that.
You think the game is fun, but you haven't beat it yet? By the way, I'm going to whammy and rock out and beat the game. Like, it really, it's incredible.
I hope there's video of him playing, because he says that he was having some trouble with some of the bosses, as you would imagine, but the final boss went down in only 3 attempts. He said he the final boss was fairly easy. I would love to see him, like, attacking, and then moving the
whammy!
Guitar. That's got to be hilarious.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, it really is. It's just like, I can't beat the first boss with a controller and 10 fingers.
I mean, don't you guys like intentionally make certain games harder? Like, some eventually when you get so good at a game, you're just like, you know what? Playing it normally is just it's too boring. And now I'm going to name drop the game that I always name drop, F-Zero GX, for example.
I think that was in your writer. You had to mention that game, or you would not be on the show.
Exactly. Nintendo and Sega are still paying me the big bucks to keep on mentioning that game. I think eventually, like, I got so good at that game, and I'm bragging now. This is not even a humble brag. This is just pure bragging that I intentionally sat down upside down on my sofa, and I would just play the game upside down, and that was just like
really.
If you want to drift left, you would have to like push right on the control stick, and it was so bizarre, especially because I would play in first person and it would be going at like 1,000 miles an hour,
play a new game? Why not just move on to a different game? If you have to literally make all the blood rush to your head in order to create any kind of challenge. It's time to move on to something new.
No, it's because he's also upside down with a poodle skirt kicking his legs up in the air while Summer Lovin' plays in the background.
Oh.
And he's got the sweet 50s doo-wop going as he plays F-Zero.
This is what happens when drugs aren't legalized, all right? you gotta go for alternative there.
I guess. I think it's safe to say I've never gotten that good at any game. I think I've always gotten to a place where I feel like I'm good and then moved on to something else. Or I've gotten so good at a game that I then moved up into another class of players and realized, oh, I'm not that good, actually. I thought I was really good, and then people came in and kicked my butt. So
I'll play on hard or something like that. But yeah, that's about it. I've never strap one hand behind my, but I love that people do it because I love watching their videos, and I love picturing Andrew with just like the reddest face as all the blood.
Man discovered it, passed out in room. F-Zero still on in television news at 11. Oh, well, now is a good time to take a quick pause and thank our sponsor, Varonis, who I hope doesn't mind me saying my Varonis. I'm sure they've never heard that before. Varonis Dat Anywhere is the fastest way to turn your own network shares into a Dropbox-like, secure, enterprise-class, private cloud. Say that three times fast. You get mobile access, file synchronization, and secure third-party sharing. Give your users file sync and mobile access without changing your IT infrastructure, without moving your data, and without reconfiguring permissions. It's easy. You know your file shares are secured, backed up, and reliable. Why change everything or move terabytes of files to the cloud when you can simply sync directly with your existing storage? Keep your data on your existing file servers. Keep your existing permissions. Monitor and control access to files. Set up rules to control access and remotely wipe devices. You can even sync with Windows, Mac OS X, iOS, and Android. And you can safely share files with third parties without adding them to Active Directory. It installs in about 30 minutes, so it's super simple. And we'll give you 30 days with unlimited amount of users for free. And as a special bonus to DLC listeners, if you go to varonis.com/DLC, that's varonis.com/DLC, you get 5 users free forever, forever, ever. So let people know, or let Varonis know, that you listen to DLC, support the show, and go to varonis.com/DLC. Check it out for free for 30 days. And get 5 users for free forever just by using that URL, varonis.com/DLC. We thank Varonis for supporting the show, and hope you support them in return. Okay, back to the news. I'm a little reluctant to bring up this story because we've talked about it on previous episodes and kind of turned into a circular argument, but it is of note that the head of ESPN declared this week that esports are not a sport. Yes, we have talked about this many times, but John Skipper, who is the head of ESPN, was at the Code Media Series in New York, a conference in New York, sponsored by Recode, and he was asked to comment on Twitch and Amazon's $1 billion acquisition of said Twitch. And he said, we're not really interested in esports. We don't care. Despite the fact that ESPN showed the Dota International 2014 Championship Grand Finals. So I only bring this up. I know we've talked about this at length. I'm interested to hear what Andrew thinks of it, though. But I only bring this up because I've been playing so much Heroes of the Storm this week and in previous weeks. And I'm so into the MOBA space at this point that the only comparison that I can really make effectively in my head is to playing a pickup game of basketball. It's that same thrill. It's that same team camaraderie. It's that same repetitive, like, if I lose, I want to play again. If I win, I want to play again. It's exercising that fun teamwork. I pass you the ball, you go. and we try to score together. So it does feel to me like a team sport, and the variation is infinite. Every round plays differently, even though the rules are the same every time. So, Andrew, what's your take on esports being sports?
I mean, I personally think it is a sport. There's reflexes involved. There's strategy involved. But on the other hand, I don't think that that calling it not a sport, I don't think that was very, I don't think it was dismissive on his part. I think as an industry, sometimes we get defensive when we're like, oh, well, video games aren't art, or, oh, video games aren't a sport. I think people that are in the know understand, and we would like for the greater populace to use these labels that they're familiar with. But I think he made a fair argument in saying, hey, esports aren't a sport. They're a competition. That's what he said. They're a competition, like right. Chess is a competition. And I think that's a fair assessment. But personally, I think given the amount of training and the actual physical reflexes that a lot of these esports demand, I think it's a sport, and I think it's really it's compelling to watch. I think it's sort of like other sports. Like if you watch football and you don't know what's going on, if you don't know what the rules are, you might dismiss it, right? You're like, I don't know what's going on. I don't understand why this is so interesting. Why are you so worked up about this? And I think esports works the same way. If you watch League without knowing what's going on, you're going to also be like, this isn't a sport, you know?
Right. I would like to point out that the Gru in the chat room says, please don't ask Spicer his opinion. We know it already. Nothing is a sport except for rollerblading. Spicer, your response.
Well, you're asking me my opinion now. One, very funny and totally accurate and 100% accurate. I've covered this before. If you are just now listening, it is not a sport, and that is not an insult. That is not an insult to gaming. Be proud of what we do. It doesn't need to be a sport to be cool. Unless, if you want to call this a sport, then chess is a sport, poker is a sport, backgammon is a sport, poker is a sport.
You said poker twice.
Well, that's because I it's meant twice a five sport. Card draw and Texas Hold'em. Competitive eating is a sport. And if that's fine, if you want to blow out the definition of the word sport to include this stuff, then that's well and good, and that's fine. Also, who cares? What Andrew hit on it, what the argument is that people are always going for is they want their hobby, their passion, their career to have mainstream respect, and people think that by having it be called a sport, that will somehow get that otherwise. It doesn't happen. Look at hockey. Everyone calls that a sport, and it is a piece of crap. No one cares about it, and it has no respect because it's the worst thing that's ever been invented. I couldn't finish without laughing. Also, Zav is a horrible human being. What I'm trying to say...
Wow. Kicking guy who's not even here to defend himself.
Yeah, well, we've been DMing, so hopefully he'll hear this and reply. That's the issue, and it doesn't. That's fine. If the OEM wants to update, I mean, the OEM has an Oxford English Dictionary has included, you know, dumb little words now have definitions that didn't. The English language is always evolving and changing, and if the definition of the word sport becomes broader to include things like poker and also poker, then fine, it's a sport. But the nug is, people want it to have respect what they do so they can tell their parents, I want to be a League of Legends gamer, you know, and not have their parents roll their eyes at them, much like if a kid said, I want to play quarterback in the NFL, and parents don't roll their eyes at that. And I think getting one guarantee the other.
We saw a college offering scholarships for League of Legends players recently. Which is pretty cool. And I would also like to point out that Ryson in the chat room said podcasting is a sport. And can't argue with that.
I'm sitting on the ground and I am winning physical exertion to keep my posture up.
All right. So we don't need to delve into that too much. I basically wanted to bring that up just to say how the only point of comparison I have in my head now when I'm playing MOBA is to a real physical going out into the park and playing pickup basketball. And I love that it scratches that same itch for me because, you know, it's easy.
It's been
easy.
Hot out and you don't want to go play basketball.
Real hot out. Yes. one more story that I wanted to bring up, and that is this ridiculous tiny Titan bug that happened in Madden 15. I just want to bring it up so we can all LOLs at it. And I like the fact that EA embraced it. So basically what happened was there was some sort of error in the data input for Christian Kirksey on the Browns, who is 6 feet two, but in the game is 1 foot two, and he's a teeny little guy. And there was a bunch of videos that were posted of him like making epic tackles at 1 foot two. And if you haven't seen them, they're hilarious. And I guess EA saw that, fixed it, made a hot fix. So it's not in the game anymore, but because people liked it, they added a new Ultimate Team challenge featuring the Tiny Titan, or Tiny Brown in this case. You can see they like put out a little promo video that was really funny of him being tiny but powerful. I like this. This to me is a company. Yeah, they put out a buggy product, but at least they can laugh at themselves and they fixed it, addressed it immediately, but also embraced the bug. And I just kind of wanted to, you know, we don't applaud EA very often. This is one of those times when I would applaud them.
Go ahead. Clap.
Andrew, are you with me on this one?
I think in general, it's always better for companies and people to admit to their mistakes and then just fix it, because you know what? That people endear you a lot more when you make a mistake and then fix it than if you get it right the first time, which is why I always make mistakes, because then people will like me more when I fix them.
Good plan. Never do it right the first time. Any other stories here that you want? I saw, Christian, you added a few stories to the mix. Did you want to bring anything else up?
Batman's official release date is June 2015. Now, if people didn't see that seemed like a bigger delay than what I was expecting from a game that was originally, was it November this year, October this year at first reveal? And now we're, you know, almost a year away, 9 months away or whatever. That makes me a little sad, but optimistic that maybe the game is going to be that much better. But when I saw that, it was like that mini video game kick to the stomach where I was like, oh, June.
I love having a big release coming in June, though, because usually there's few games in that little period, and it's great to have a game that comes out right before summer and you can really dig into. I remember, what was it? Red Dead Redemption was in that window. And I think there's some other really great games that have been right in that like pre-summer area, although that's, I think, right before E3, if I'm not mistaken, which is interesting and always a little bit weird as a reviewer. But yeah, I hope, I agree. I hope it makes for a better game.
I mean, did you guys ever check out the game in preview? Because
I did, yeah, E3. It was awesome.
Yeah, but it definitely looked like it needed a bit more work. So I'm glad that they're delaying it, just because you know, all the ideas are cool, but it still seems like it wasn't quite up to Rocksteady standards. So that, for me, when I heard about the delay, I was like, oh, thank God. Because I was really afraid that they were just going to rush the game out in October and just patch the heck out of it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. I always am happy when a game gets a little longer to bake if it needed to, rather than, pushing it out because you need to, like NHL right now is having all these problems because they had to hit it out by the certain point. And that's never a good thing. Anything else you guys wanted to bring up, or should we move on to the playlist?
I'm cool to move on. I don't know if Andrew has anything else he wants to dive into though from these.
I don't know if you actually ever want to talk about Gamergate, but obviously that was a thing that happened. I feel like that's just too big of a topic to really talk about in a, you know, like 2 minute segment, you know?
Yeah. I addressed it a couple of weeks ago. It continues to be a ridiculous non-story in my opinion. And, there was some talk on the subreddit about that. If you guys want to see my opinion, I posted it there as well. I think that's all we need to say about that. Let's move on to the playlist. Andrew, what have you been playing this week?
I finally got a chance to check out Mario Kart 8. ridiculous Mercedes-Benz DLC. If you guys don't know about this, it's a free update to Mario Kart 8, and it just adds three real-world cars from Mercedes-Benz, and it makes no sense whatsoever. But I love it because it's so bizarre, and like for a company that needs to make money in new ways, this is like not the way I thought that they would go about doing it. And yeah, it's really smart because the update, in addition to giving you these free cars, they really promote the upcoming DLC that's coming out from Mario Kart 8. There's already like giant question marks plastered in the character select screen, and the core the level select screen. You see the cups that they're adding. So this is a great way for Nintendo to be like, hey, you want to buy the DLC because now you have an incomplete game. And I hate that they're doing it, and I hate that I'm falling for it and that I'm going to buy it. And I love how they're doing it in a very Nintendo way.
That's pretty awesome. I think that it's crazy that they managed to pull that off, as you said. It's like, it's so crass and so out of place, and yet because they embrace it so much, it has like this kitschy appropriateness. It's like gone full circle all the way back around to being appropriate. It's weird.
It's so bad, it's good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's cool. The playlist is the part of the show where we love to hear from you. You can call in and let us know what you're playing at 512-518-5714. If you're listening live right now on Monday at 11, it's always great to have you call in, 512-518-5714. And if you're listening later, come hang out with us some Monday. We'd love to have you. Anything else you're playing there, Andrew?
I haven't had much time to play games, but at PAX, one of the coolest games that I saw, Dreadnought. Have you guys heard of it?
I have heard of it, but I haven't played it. Tell me about it.
Okay, so Dreadnought is just like you're in control of your own battle stars. Essentially, you get there's these different classes of space vehicles, and it's deathmatch. You're fighting other starships. And it's awesome because it's like World of Tanks, but instead of tanks, they're spaceships.
Oh, interesting.
So I don't know what else to say about it other than like, so one of the really cool things about World of Tanks is that the way you position your ship, your craft, and like how you manipulate the environment. And that's a really big part of the gameplay of World of Tanks. Dreadnought takes it to another level because you're in a spaceship, you have that extra axis, right? You have the verticality where you can go up and down, and the ships themselves have unique powers where you can sort of jump if your ship has that. There's shields. There's a lot of interesting powers where
you mean like jump to light speed or jump as in like Mario would jump?
Jump to like light speed and teleport to a different part of the map. And so yeah, Dreadnought just. For me, as someone that loves spaceships, it's so much fun being able to finally play a cooperative game where it works out in exactly the way I had imagined, like in terms of like me playing with like spaceship toys and like, you know, I'm like, oh, this one's shooting a laser at you and this one, you know, like explodes. And then, you know, this one like has the shield go up and like takes the barrage and then like a sniper comes behind it and, you know, shoots the other ships down. It is so much fun. It is so cool. And I really hope that more people end up checking it out because I think it's one of those games where, like, once you play it, you get it and you can't help but get super, super excited for it.
Now, does it have that sort of slow, methodical pace that a tank game has? I mean, I guess World of Tanks does have fast tanks and stuff as well. But
it's definitely a slow game. It's definitely, you know, you're not playing a starfighter. You're definitely playing a... You know, you're definitely playing a battleship. You know, you're not the Raptor. You're not a TIE fighter. You're very much this big, gigantic, lumbering ship, fighting other big, gigantic, lumbering ships. And that's why I like it so much, just because I feel like the genre of like TIE fighter and, you know, X-wing versus TIE fighter, like that's pretty well explored. But playing as these gigantic ships in an action game, that's really cool.
Yeah, that's true. It's almost like playing as a Star Destroyer instead of a TIE fighter. Or a big, you know, I guess in the real world, the comparison would be to a aircraft carrier where it takes a while to move around and make a turn is not easy. And That's a really interesting concept. Are you able to launch like little ships off of your big ship, or is it all sort of gigantic ship to gigantic ship combat?
Right now it's all gigantic ship to gigantic ship combat. But once you said that, I was like, oh my God, they really need to add smaller ships as a thing too. But yeah. For now, all I've seen is big ships going against big ships, and I've had fun every time I've played it. So.
Oh, cool. We have several people on the line, so I want to check out what some folks are playing. There's somebody from the 412 area code. What's your name? Where are you calling from? And what's on your playlist?
Hey, this is AJ in Pittsburgh. I'm actually playing right now Minecraft on the Xbox One. It came out for like the next-gen consoles this past Friday, and I've actually never played a lick of Minecraft before, so I figured I'd give it a shot.
And what do you think?
It's interesting, because like, I always kind of understood the part where it's like, oh, people are building like the Starship Enterprise, and I watched the YouTube video of it, but I guess no one ever really told me there's a game where you're like, right, you know, surviving the zombies and all that stuff. And it's interesting, because you know, The Sims 4 just came out not too long ago, and I was kind of on the fence, like, oh, do I want to get another Sims game? I don't know. But as I started playing this, I'm kind of getting that same kind of chill out vibe I got from The Sims 4, but there's a little more game to it, so I'm really digging it.
You know, I had the exact same experience when I first tried Minecraft however many years ago, in getting really into the game of, okay, you just got plopped into a world, you have nothing. And when night falls, danger's coming for you. So you better prepare as best you can. And once night falls, you better get in that hidey hole. You better make yourself a hidey hole, because you got to get away from those zombies, because they will get you. And that progression, that really fast progression from having absolutely nothing to living in a cave, to carving out that cave, to creating tools, to outfitting yourself, to making a palace, to having this total dominion over this entire world, is a very fun ramp up. And I don't have kids. My nephews play it like crazy, but I'm not around them a ton, so I'm not really sure. But my sense is that most kids don't really play that mode. That's not the hook for the kids. What the kids love playing God mode, or at least anecdotally, my nephew loves playing God mode and just zooming around the map and making whatever he wants to make and grabbing whatever he wants to grab and not having to worry about that game, as you put it, the game part of surviving. But I found that to be, as you said, the most compelling. And I think that what we're seeing with some of these upcoming Minecraft influenced games like Fortnite is that's really what people are grabbing onto, is that feeling of having to prepare for bad things that are going to happen to you by manipulating your environment and being creative in how you're going to deal with the impending doom. But I'm not really sure that's the biggest hook, at least for the young people, but it certainly was for me. Andrew, have you gotten into Minecraft at all?
I wish I could get into it. I play it with my little brother, because he's obsessed with it, and that's really all he does with his spare time. And I intellectually understand why he likes it so much. I just personally find it really tedious and boring. I guess for me, like the goals are really cool. I like the fact that you can build all these amazing things. But for me, I'd rather play with Legos.
It's no playing F-Zero upside down.
It's definitely not playing F-Zero upside down. And I wish every time I flip my brother upside down and tell him, play F-Zero, he seems to cry. So I don't know what to do about that.
That is very strange. Christian, what's on your playlist this week?
Has anyone else played any Velocity 2X? It came out on, if you're PS Plus, it's free. If not, I don't know how much it is, but I think maybe $15. And hey, Jeff, here it is. It's on the Vita, cross buy. Cross save. So good.
Where I get this version of you in my head that you seem to not think is real. I don't know where I get that.
You're warped, man. I don't know what it is. Anyway, let's talk about the Vita for a minute. I've been playing this game a lot on my Vita. So the game is a sequel, maybe to Velocity Ultra, I think. I guess that'd be the one it's a sequel of, which is like the redone version of the older. It's always weird. I don't think it necessarily matters, though. This isn't a plot-heavy game, per se, where you're coming in and you're like, I don't know what's going on. I didn't play Uncharted 1. It's not like that at all. But what's new to this for the series is on foot levels. So the game is broken into two kind of styles of play. One is a top-down ship. It looks kind of like a shmup, but you're navigating through worlds and you want to go through these things quickly, but also pick up survivors and unlock collectibles. And your moves are you're able to dash, to teleport short distances, and then shoot. And then when you dock your ship, you're on foot and you can, it's kind of like a 2D side scroller twin stick shooter, if that makes sense. Like that your right stick is shooting and you can dash and slide and collect things. Excuse me. The art style is great. It controls great. I think it's a really fun game. If you've looked up reviews, it's getting like nines and tens across the board. And so for me, I think it's super fun. It's well made. I haven't experienced any bugs or anything like that. But I think this game for me is my current reminder of how review scores. I almost wish the system was changed a little bit. And this is true of all media, right? We're like, except for Siskel and Ebert are people that have elevated themselves via their name to be a thing. You'll look on like Rotten Tomatoes and it will be like Variety gave, I don't know, Captain America an A rating. But it's like, oh, well, that's the publication. So for video games, it's like, oh, IGN gave Velocity 2X a 9 out of 10. But like, I really want to get into that world of knowing personal people's reviews. Because like, to me, this game is fun. It's well made. It doesn't have any flaws, blah, 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 blah. But I personally have had more fun with Shovel Knight and Counter Spy, which Counter Spy gets like half the review score that this game gets. And so it's that world of like knowing what do people enjoy. You know what I mean? Like you, Heroes of the Storm, 10 out of 10 or whatever it is, right?
Yeah. So is there an 11? Can I do an 11?
Turn it up to 11. I mean, if you're a PS Plus member, you should definitely check this out. And if you think it sounds like your style of game, you know, it's worth playing. I said it's really well made for me, where for my type of gaming where it's leaving me, I'm not dying to go back to it. Like you were saying with Heroes, like you want to get right back in and play, is I get through a level and I just kind of feel like, oh, neat. Like it's not a head-scratching puzzler the way the Swapper is, which I'm still going back to, or like Portal was. So I find I think it's hooks to bring you back are supposed to be to get all the collectibles or to increase your score, you know, to complete the level quicker. And for whatever reason, those hooks aren't sinking into me. So after I complete a level, I'm very happy to put the game down and go back to Swapper or something like that. But have either of you guys checked it out? Maybe you can chime in with your thoughts.
I have not. Have you, Andrew?
Unfortunately, no. I just haven't had a chance yet. But it sounds cool, and all the games that you mentioned, I do like. So,
yeah, like I said, it's free if you're PS Plus. And some reviewers, and this stuff I do like, you know, about the written review and diving in is, gosh, I forget who it was, but kind of equated it to the feeling you get of playing Sonic the Hedgehog when you were little on the Genesis, where you want to map speed and accuracy for how you navigate this level. Granted, it's not this. I think this describes the ship shooting more so than the 2D part. But it's just like that weird thing of that early Sonic games did so well, where you want to keep your speed up, but you're also trying to avoid hazards and collect rings. And when velocity clicks, you're kind of doing that same thing as you're speed running through this level, boosting, and then jumping and collecting. And if you can get into that rhythm, it can kind of give you, for what I got out of a game like Rez or something, where you kind of get in the zone and like you don't realize your fingers are, you know what I mean? You're kind of just clicking along, moving along, and then you finish the level. So if you think those games sound, you know, up your alley, I would definitely check it out. Like I said, it's well made, cross save and cross buy, and it's pretty. The art style is cool. So yeah, you guys should check it out.
Is it Heroes of the Storm?
Because no,
I haven't played it. If it's not that,
it's also not The Last of Us. So I understand what you're saying.
You've been playing a lot of The Last of Us as well?
I dove back into Remastered. It's, holy moly, that's a beautiful game. It's, wow. It's a beautiful, I'm really excited about Uncharted for what Naughty Dog can maybe do on the PS4. You know, I'm an unabashed, I'm a fan of Last of Us, and Remastered is good. That's all there is to it. It's, again, not Heroes of the Storm, though.
Yeah, I know. I'm probably sick of people. People are probably sick of hearing me talk about Heroes of the Storm, but it is obsession for me. And you know, this week I went into a groove where we lost a bunch of games in a row, and it was frustrating. We couldn't figure out what we were doing wrong and how we lost our mojo. And it was still, I still wanted to play it over and over and over again, even though we were getting our butts kicked. It's just so great. And I know every time I bring it up, people say, oh, you got to try Dota. You got to try League. Okay. Here in a nutshell is what I like about Heroes over those things. It's fast and it's a brawler and it's a team game in a different way. It's a team game where everybody, in order to win, you have to be all in the same battle, and you have these wonderful brawling team battles instead of sort of worrying about my lane or your lane. Although there is some of that, it is more about, like I said, that basketball analogy of being in service of the team in direct way, in a way where we're all in the same place at the same time, and it is executing at a high level in order to win. And I'm still just so overwhelmed by how awesome it is. And they haven't even started getting to the real balancing part. Evidently, this alpha is just about technical stuff. So the game still has a long way to go, but I play it every day and can't stop. But let's find out what other people are talking about. We still have several folks on the line. We got 80850 on the line. I think, is this our buddy Matthew?
Yeah, it is.
Hey, Matthew.
I went to PAX last week, so I know you guys have talked about this demo before, or at least have seen it, but I got to do the Oculus Rift Eve Valkyrie demo, and yes, it is an amazing demo and does show what VR can do.
You believe it is our future, like the children.
Yes,
man. I know that that was the moment for me, what, two E3s ago or whatever it was, that I jumped on that bandwagon. And as you know, every week in this episode of this show, I tend to bring up some cool new thing for VR. But yeah, that was the transformatory experience for me as well with the Oculus. And I can't wait till that game is out, till the Oculus is a consumer product. But I think we're going to be waiting a lot longer.
Hey, I'm pulling this from the chat, but it's a good point. Drew Tomlinson posted, have you finished Divinity, or has Heroes of the Storm divorced you from your first love?
It is merely stolen my time. I'm really close to the end. And I read, you know, honestly, I'll tell you the honest truth here. And I'm embarrassed about this, but I'll still be honest about it because that's how much I care about the audience. I read people that I really respect. Patrick Klepek, and I think it was, who else was it? It was somebody else that were talking about how rough that last fight is, the final boss battle, and how it almost ruined their love for that game.
Like rough as in hard, or rough as in like glitchy, or
rough as in hard, rough as in just a huge difficulty spike and required so much more patience and time and everything. And I feel like I'm getting very close to that point, and I slowed down and kind of don't want it to be ruined because I love that game so much. But yeah, and then also that combination with that and Heroes coming into my life. And, you know, there's this thing that happens, it's particular to me, but I'm sure other people can relate, that when there is a great team game, and it's about to happen tomorrow when Destiny lands, and it'll happen to me again, and all of my friends are playing that, I have a harder time making time for a single player experience because everybody is doing this thing. I get texts from friends going, I'm on, let's do it. Let's grab, here's the storm, let's do it. Boom, boom, boom. And I get swept up in that fun camaraderie, that fun community excitement about playing the new hotness. In this case, it is hots. And I'm sure it'll happen with Destiny is that, you know, it's what the gang is playing. And so it's fun playing with the gang. So the single player experiences get neglected a little bit. And I don't think I have a problem with that, but
no, I mean, it makes sense, right? I mean, Divinity will be there for you. It'll always be there. Single player experience, it won't change. You can go back to it anytime. But the Heroes of the Storm or Destiny, like being part of the zeitgeist when that is the thing that everyone's playing and talking about, like that will change. Like if you went out and bought Titanfall today, it's still a very well-made game that you could have a lot of fun with, but it's a very different experience today than it was if you were day one. And I think for a lot of people, it is a worse experience because you're coming in at zero and all these other people are 20, and half of the fun of these games is being in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That totally makes sense to me. I'm the same way with, you know, that thing. And that's the beauty of multiplayer gaming, that when done right, it really does capture our mindset and the creativity of everybody, like it's telling their stories I totally get that. For Heroes of the Storm, it doesn't need to be, well, one, Andrew, have you MOBA'd yet at all?
No, I haven't MOBA'd yet. I'm sort of scared to MOBA because...
Have you watched a friend MOBA? Has anyone
a lot of my friends are MOBAing and
do you or someone you love want a MOBA?
And sometimes I feel like I want a MOBA with them, you know, but I'm scared to ask, you know?
Well, you can take MOBA classes over at the local Y with Lady Preda teaches some MOBA Beginner 101. I don't know what accent that is. That's just
awful.
Do
you want a MOBA? Sure. We all do.
Hi, I'm Brad, and I'm here to show you in 40 steps how you can MOBA. We got great specials today on the Shopping Network, guys. We got MOBA lessons coming in hot.
Sorry, go ahead, Anthony. Andrew. Sorry.
The sad thing is I was actually at Riot Games a few days ago, and they were showing me all this stuff. And I'm like, they're like, so do you play? I'm like, no, I have no idea what you showed me. All the words you just said made no sense. And like, I signed an NDA, so I can't. I was like, it doesn't matter. I don't even know how to tell people what I saw. Nothing you actually said made any connection to me whatsoever.
And then they showed you their last feature. It was their door. And they said, thanks for coming.
Yeah. Let's get to another call. We got somebody from the 415 area code, which I think is the Bay Area, if memory serves. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Well, actually, I'm a Bay Area transplant. This is Reese. I'm from San Francisco originally, but now I'm down in L.A. in Hollywood.
Awesome. What you playing?
So I've been playing, the big thing that for my household, because my girlfriend's obsessed with the series, is the new Dance Central Spotlight that just came out on Xbox One as a downloadable title. She's huge into those, and I enjoy them too. So we've been kind of waiting, you know, for one to come out for the Xbox One. We pretty much had like Dance Central 2 and Dance Central 3 when those came out for the 360. So we were excited for the new one, and so we've gotten that one. And it's pretty
good. This is exactly why we take calls on the show. This is exactly why, because that title would never come up, and I'm so glad it has. Tell me, what is it better on Xbox One, or is the Kinect better able to sense your movement? Is there any improvement, or are you just kind of more of the same joy that you already experienced?
I mean, honestly, I mean, the dance games were always kind of the strong suit, or the only suit, some would argue, of the Kinect to begin with. So, I always had a pretty solid experience with them to begin with. So that solid experience has just continued on. When I think about it in detail, you know, there's definitely seems to be a bit more precision with the dance moves, you know, like which allows them to kind of have more complicated dance moves. Like I could track how many moves you quote unquote mastered, which means you got perfect, you know, you were able to perfectly emulate. And I mean, I've already been playing for a few days and have hit 100 moves or whatever. And there's an achievement for like mastering like 1,000 moves. So it seems,
when you get really good at it, you're going to have to just play it upside down. That's the ultimate test of Dance Central as it is for every game.
That would be a pretty interesting feat. but what's pretty
cool
is
it, so that way you're just dancing, you're remembering the moves, but like, you don't have to actually look at the screen in order to mimic them. You know, I think that'd be really cool.
I think my girlfriend could probably do that because she actually studied a lot of dance. So she gets like insane high scores on the dances. And meanwhile, I'm barely scraping by. So,
did this guy just call up to brag about how awesome his girlfriend is? That's what this was about.
Well, did you guys see the video? The video of his...
Well, no, I did really want to bring attention to
this. Did you see the video of his girlfriend who beat the game using a Rock Band controller?
Yeah, she's awesome. I love that. That's exactly why we take calls on the show, is to highlight games that we haven't been playing and we wouldn't talk about any other way. And I think it's cool that somebody's using their Kinect for something that is anything other than turning on my TV, which is what I'm using mine for. So bravo to that. Looks like we got another call. Let's just see if we can grab this one from 413 area code. A lot of 41s today. What's your name? Where are you calling from? And what's on your playlist?
I'm Nate. I'm calling from Massachusetts. This week I actually got to check out Star Citizen.
Oh wow! Tell me about it.
There was like a five day code to play the beta or alpha or whatever phase it is in right now, and I thought it was really cool. First of all, I wanted to see if it would run on my computer, but the game is absolutely gorgeous.
Did it live up to the hype?
I think so. I'm not about to drop $10,000 on some digital spaceships, but I'll probably buy it when it comes out.
Did it run on your computer? And what kind of rig are you running? Because I think that is a concern. I know they showed it on a high powerful on like an Alienware laptop at some point. But what are you running, and how did it look?
Yeah, it's I'm running an i7 with 8 gigs of RAM and a GTX 660. So it ran on high settings pretty well.
Yeah, well, you have a pretty good, I have an i3 ThinkPad and.
Yeah, man, that game, I'm definitely amped for. And it's cool that Kickstarter backers are getting to play it early, and it does sound ambitious. I don't know. I will wait and judge when it comes out. I don't know how. As much as I've always wanted to return back to flying through the sky in a first person piloting kind of game, I don't know if that's where my headspace is for gaming anymore. I don't know if that's something that I'm going to be putting a ton of hours in. I certainly want to check it out, but we shall see.
I mean, imagine I think with, and I don't know if Star Citizen is this or it was the darling of E3, Brain. Why are you going Brain? I'm just thinking Lonely Planet, and that's definitely not it.
No Man's Sky.
Thank you. Yeah. No Man's Sky. I mean, how could these games not be for you? I mean, how could Skyrim?
Well, I think
space...
No Man's Sky is going to be different than that. It's not. I don't think No Man's Sky is going to be a dogfighting sim in the same way that Star Citizen is. You know, is a Wing Commander. It's in the lineage of Wing Commander.
But it's so much bigger.
It is so much bigger, but I think it's going to be a much more technical experience than No Man's Sky. I think No Man's Sky is going to be about exploring and about, you know, all kinds of different ways to interact with the environment. And so will Star Citizen, but I think it's going to be a much more technical sort of military experience, more of a simulation of that kind of world rather than a exploration. Does that make sense? I could be wrong. I could be completely off base on that, but... I will refrain from judging until I play them. I just get the sense that as excited as I am for what it looks like, I sense that the gameplay won't hook me, but we'll see. And also, it's not Heroes of the Storm. All right. You know what else is not Heroes of the Storm? Board games. It's time to get to tabletop time. One of the biggest reasons I wanted to have Andrew back on our show, or on our show for the first time, but back in our lives, reunion style, is that he has now designed his own tabletop game. I'm so excited to hear about this. It's called Divorce the Game. As a guy who has never gotten divorced, Andrew, how are you qualified to make this game?
Well, I am a child of divorce. My dad gotten divorced enough times for me and probably my children. so I feel like in that way I'm a bit qualified. But But yeah, a lot of people do ask, like, oh, well, you know, it's like, divorce is a sad topic. Why would you want to make a game about it? You know, it seems like it would be really unfun. And generally, the answer that I give people is that it's not meant to be a divorce simulator. You're not really, it's not like a serious interpretation of divorce, and you're not really supposed to like feel really bummed at the end of it. It's a parody of divorce. It does make you want to like do terrible things to the other person, and it is all about getting the financial edge. But ultimately it's a playful game. The fact that like, you know, like at PAX we gave away promo cards which included hentai. Like, I think that's like the sort of tone that we're going for.
Hey, so it's Andrew, a comic take. Go ahead.
Andrew, why don't you go ahead and open your Christmas present here from me, your dad. And also, I'm getting a divorce.
Actually, so we're hoping to launch the game in January so that we can sell it in time for Valentine's Day. That is actually the plan.
Hilarious. So tell me about how the game plays.
All right. So yeah, Divorce the Game. It's a two-player card game. It can only be played with two players, unfortunately. The two players are exes, and they're separating their stuff. So the deck of cards represents everything you own: the house, the car, the wedding ring. These are all your possessions, and you have to divide them up in a way where you end up with more net value than the other player. So on your turn, it's real simple. You just draw two cards face up. There's no secrets in divorce, actually. Face up. You keep one card for yourself, and you give the other card to the other player. And so actually, as you start playing, you realize, oh, well, I wanna have the painting, but I really don't want him to have the stock. So if I do that, like, you start making these decisions where you're thinking not only about what you want, but making sure that you're not giving what the other player wants. So yeah,
is this a friendship ruiner? It sounds like it's kind of a friendship ruiner. Like in that fun way, the way that,
yeah, it I will say that winning the game, you feel amazing. And usually in my playtest, the people that win are the ones that like are like, okay, I'm definitely buying a copy of the game. And I will say that the best playtests are with people that have a long relationship with one another. Because that way you start role playing, you really get into character. You add a lot more, just backstory, because there's no actual backstory in the game. So everything that you bring, that luggage, that's what adds flavor to the game. So I think I remember seeing one of my favorite playtests was with my friend and his girlfriend. Unfortunately, my friend is an actuary, so he picked up on the systems and really understood what numbers were happening, and like completely deconstructed the game while he was playing. So he destroyed her. He destroyed his girlfriend. And at the end of the game, he owned everything, and he had like $300,000 worth of stuff, and she was in debt. She just had lawyer's fees. That's all she ended up with.
Wow. And he was, that guy.
Yeah, exactly. And he's like, this is why we're never getting a divorce. And she's, and then her response is like, we're not having sex for a week.
Well, she wins.
So, yeah. So really, in many ways, I guess, yeah, it does ruin friendships and relationships, which is why you should buy it and play, because you're going to enjoy, you're going to really enjoy ruining and burning bridges. So,
well, I love games that have a really strong theme like this, and this is a ridiculously unique theme, to say the least. But what came first? Did you decide you wanted to make a game about divorce, or did you have these mechanics and then found a great theme for it? What came first, the mechanics or the theme?
Definitely the mechanics. So the game's origins are actually based on a design that I was working on about imaginary numbers. So it was just, the idea of the game was you have multiples of I, the square root of -1, if you're not mathematically inclined. And you're, as a group, you're trying to prevent making anything real. So like the concept of just all these people just trying to avoid making something real sort of tickled me.
But, sounds like divorce to me.
Yeah. and so ultimately I'm like, well, you know, I like the feelings that these games, that the game was giving people, because you would give cards to other players and keep cards for yourself. And so it felt great when you like screwed someone over by giving them a card that they really didn't want or need. And so thinking about it, it's like, oh, well, how do I get that feeling, that mechanic, and do it, you know, make a game that's a lot more accessible, that doesn't involve having to know how to multiply, you know, negative I times negative one, you know, it's like that's just not very accessible for a lot of people. So thinking about that, I knew that I wanted to have that, like, keep one, give one mechanic. And the skin didn't really click until I watched like the first 5 minutes of the show on Bravo called Untying the Knot, which is about a divorce mediator. And these two people were fighting over this vase that clearly neither of them wanted. But it was just more about like, well, I don't want him to have it. I don't want her to have it. So I was just watching this and I couldn't watch anymore because these were terrible people. But it stuck in my head. I was like, these are terrible, terrible, awful people.
I want to turn my players into terrible people.
Exactly. I want to make a game about them. And so that imaginary number game sort of got reskinned into this game about divorce. And then, like, after playtest, people really loved it. And they were doing the things that I, as a designer, I would hope that they would, where even if you try to play amicably, there comes a point where, like, you're forced to make a decision. Are you going to screw yourself over? Or are you going to screw the other person over? And everyone always screws the other person over. And once that happens, it never remains an amicable divorce. Like, after that point, the lawyers come out. People are just spending money left and right trying to destroy each other's stuff and steal it. And I just love seeing that happen. Yeah.
Sounds like an accurate simulation.
Maybe it is a divorce simulator after all.
My question, Andrew, like, from seeing, you know, this game and you talking about it and stuff, like, what is, in your opinion, the replayability between the same two people?
So, to be honest, I thought, you know, when I designed the game, I'm like, you know, this is a silly game. It's not really, you know, it'll be fun to play, like, once or twice. It's like a gimmick game, whatever. but now that I've played it, like, literally hundreds of times now over demos, actually, I've been enjoying it even more just because you shuffle the deck every time you play. So you may know what's actually in the deck, but you never know when it's going to come up. And so based on the decisions that you're making and the other players making and the order in which the cards appear, you really have to actually change up your strategy. So a good example of this is one of the cards we have in the game is a sugar daddy. The sugar daddy makes your kids not like you, but he'll give you money every turn. So if he pops up early in the game, he's actually a really powerful card, right? If he comes up really early in the game, you have the chance to profit, really, and maybe, like, win back your kids by buying them bribes over the course of the game. But if the sugar daddy comes towards the end of the game, he sort of becomes a weapon where you don't really want him. You'd rather inflict him upon a different player and make them make the kids hate that parent. You're always responding to what the deck is giving and you're responding to what other players are doing. And so on a surface level, it is a super casual game, right? You just keep one card and you give one card to the other player. But it's actually really fun seeing repeat players, like, figure out strategies and, like, come up with, like, high level tactics, which even I never really thought about. It's scary seeing, like, pro divorce players now, like people that are so good at getting divorced.
Wow. I gotta play this with my brother-in-law. This would be amazing to see with, he's just, like, the perfect mentality for this. I have another question for you, though. This is the first board game you've designed, right?
Yep.
And you mentioned going to PAX with it. What's been the experience of creating a board game, marketing a board game, bringing it to people? Like, how is that? You're somebody that's covered games for a long time, but how is that now kind of changing sides and doing that?
Well, I definitely learned a lot over the past few months, which I just never would have learned if I didn't do this. On one hand, I feel like I had a really clear vision on exactly what I wanted to do, and the marketing strategy was sort of laid out months ago. And that's mostly because I have experience dealing with PR people, and I think through being a journalist, I sort of absorbed what their tactics were. So I wanted to mimic that as much as possible. So one thing is, like, trying to come up with new talking points, make sure that I keep on reintroducing the game to people at different venues. So if you couldn't make it to PAX, well, then, you know, I'll be in LA and try to introduce it then. Like, if you're not there, then I'm in San Francisco, and just keep on trying to come up with new ways of introducing the game to a new audience. Obviously, being on this podcast talking with you guys is also part of that, you know, careful PR plan.
Right.
Hopefully the word gets out there, you know.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, you're listed on Board Game Geek, which is the first step. I love that if you pull up Divorce the Game on Board Game Geek, designer Andrew Yoon right there. It's pretty cool.
It feels good. I finally bought business cards that say game designer on it. And looking at that, I'm like, oh my God, that feels awesome. Hopefully it's not premature, and hopefully I don't this game doesn't completely tank. But
well, no, that's good, Andrew, because the cards say game designer, not games designer.
Right. Damn it, I should have had the forethought.
Nope, this is the only one.
Yeah. Now you're stuck. Well, I wanted to mention some other board games that I've been playing this week and give people, I know there was a lot of Twitter excitement for my Risk Legacy update. We played several more games of Risk Legacy, and packets have been opened. I repeat, packets have been opened. So if you guys don't remember, if you didn't hear my couple of weeks ago talking about Risk Legacy, we embarked on this crazy version of Risk that Rob Davio designed a couple of years ago. It came out, made a big splash. And it's designed to be played over 15 games. You physically alter the board right away. You are writing on things. You're tearing up cards. And there are these packets that are only opened when certain conditions are met. Well, I happen to be the first player to win two games, which is one of the conditions. And we also had the first player that was completely eliminated from the game, which is another condition. Yeah. It's only for that game. You come back in the following game. But yeah. And so both of those were prerequisites to opening these packets. Now, I'm not going to tell you what was in the packets, because that's a major spoiler if anybody is embarking on their own journey through this. But let me tell you, opening a packet was amazing and exciting. And there's a lot more in the packet than I thought there was going to be. It's not just one card that tells you something. It's a whole experience and a massive change to how the game is played. And this experience has been truly one of the most incredible board game experiences I've ever had. And this legacy Dang. Idea is wild. It's totally wild. It's it amps up the stakes of every turn of every game. And I mean, we are in that place of like, you wronged me last game, so I am screwing you now. And it is, I mean, if anybody's ever played any version of Risk, you know, it's vicious. It's a vicious game. It is a game about destroying your opponent and taking over their land. And it is mitigated by a huge dose of luck, which this game has in spades, which is a fickle minx who will screw you over just when you think you're on her good side. Those dice will come up bad for you over and over. And you're like, oh, my army is supposed to destroy you. But it has been an incredible experience. And I wish I could say more. But I don't, for fear of ruining it for anybody. But it's unlike anything I've ever played for real.
Does Erin play with you guys?
No. No, she's not in this this Risk Legacy game, no.
I was going to say, because maybe you were already playing Divorce the Game.
Hey-o! Yeah, no, I wouldn't want to... Yeah, she. I don't know how she would handle this level of viciousness on the table.
And then, are you hosting? Is this a game that needs to stay out?
No.
You know what I mean?
So it's a series of games. It's a series of games. So you play an entire game and you're done, and then you play another game, but the things you did in the previous game carry over to the new game. It's not just a long campaign in one game, which there are plenty of games like that where it just takes a long time to get through it. This is not that. This is a game where the whole idea is that what you did in the previous game that had a beginning, middle, and end affects what happens in this game, which has its own beginning, middle, and end. In fact, every game at the start, you select a new faction to be, and you roll dice, and whoever has the high roll gets to pick the faction first. And you physically write with an ink pen on that faction card who picked it. So you see a history of the people that picked it and whether they won or lost with that faction. And that faction will evolve and change over time, and you'll get to mess with the rules of that faction and what special bonus they get. And the physical rules in the rule book will actually get changed. So there's new reasons to pick different factions than there were before. So it is a brand new iteration of that experience. It's a brand new time of playing, but what happened last time affects this time.
One more question and then one last question. How many players are required for Risk Legacy?
We're playing with four. I think you can play with three or two, maybe?
That's perfect. But okay, final
you
question.
You definitely want to play with four at least.
Final question. Right now, at this moment in time, you are telling me and our listeners to either go and download, assuming I have alpha access, which let's say I do, Heroes of the Storm, or go to my local board game store and buy Risk Legacy and start playing one. Heroes of the Storm or Risk Legacy, Jeff Cannata, the man who loves loving things, who is a champion of board games, but has a HOS tattoo running down the small of his back. Which do you choose?
Well, I think it all depends on whether you can get your friends to be in the same location or you all have to be in your own homes to enjoy something. But it both require, in my opinion, friends right. that want to play that.
Right. So I have that. Let's say all of the requirements are met. This is just on gaming merit alone. Which one are you enjoying? I think you're probably playing more Heroes, but
for sure,
if all of the requirements are met to play either one as needed, which would you recommend?
That's a tough Sophie's choice you've given me.
Well, you made me predict what they'd call the iWatch, so this is only fair.
I think that I would probably Risk Legacy is an incredible experience, but it's a friend ender. So if you want to keep your friends, play HOTS. If you want to antagonize your friends, but it is a remarkable experience. I think Risk Legacy it's also cost money and HOTS is free, but we'll end up. It's a tough thing. How about play both? One of them you can actually get right now, and the other one you have to be invited by Blizzard, and that sucks because everybody's like, "Oh, why don't you give me a code?" And I'm like, "I would if I could." I've asked them for many of them, but they don't.
Oh, yeah, but thanks for giving me that code, though, Jeff. I appreciate it.
I did not give you a code.
But so what you said to translate the Jeff Cannata hemming and hawing for our listeners is you said Risk Legacy. That's what you picked. Because you kept saying it, but then you kept justifying why not.
I think you can't go wrong either way. You can't go wrong either way. So, but I'm happy with whichever of those you had said I said, I would have been happy that I said it. I also want to talk about Star Realms because I played that also. And I didn't just play it iOS version like I've been talking about. Sorry, dropped something. I haven't just been playing it iOS, although you can play it iOS for free, although there's in-app purchases. But I was very fortunate because a fan, and that's why I'm sandbagging right now because I'm looking up his name, Chavez, an awesome, awesome guy, was listening to the show and hearing me talk about how I couldn't get a copy of Star Realms, and he sent me one. So many thanks to you, Chavez. But what I hear now is that it is available on Amazon for $15. So this, like your game, Andrew, is a two-player only card game. It is basically Dominion with attacking, which is really cool because a lot of these deck-building games like Dominion are kind of break down to being little solo projects where you're just sort of creating your little deck and you don't have to interact with people. But Star Realms makes you attack people. It is all about attacking people, and it really works well as a card game, too. We had a blast playing it. It's a kind of game where you play it and you go, let's play again. Because it goes quick. It's easy to set up. It's got a cool space theme. The art's really nice and it's inexpensive. It travels well. It's just cards. I dig it, and you can try it out on the iOS for free, but I think that it really shines as a actual tabletop card game. So digging that. Andrew, what other board games? It's interesting to me because I remember when we were on We Can Confirm together, you were talking about a video game project that you wanted to design. What other board games inspired you to make a tabletop game?
Well, I still want to make a video game for sure. But in order to get there, I realized, well, I have to design things, right? Like it's making video games is pretty complex, and a good design exercise is to work in tabletop. And I never really thought that I would commercially release anything, but like I would do essentially game jams like every month, like coming up with new ideas. And yeah, Divorce did like become sort of a hit amongst my friends, which is why I ended up pursuing it. But yeah, in terms of tabletop games that I play, it's just, you know, whatever's around, right? Like I pretty much, if my friends are like, hey, I bought this, I'm like, okay, let's play it. And just pretty much everything that comes across my way, I will at least give it a try. And then I do know that there's one game about time travel. I forget the name of it. I think it's Chrononauts, mm-hmm. which I hated so much that I would love to make a new version of it. Like it had such a great idea, and I love so many things about it, but it didn't quite get to what I wanted it to be. And so, like,
I think that game was remade as Back to the Future: The Game.
That would make a lot of sense.
I think it was. But I'm much more interested talking about time travel games. Last Tuesday, a new game came out called Tragedy Looper. Have you heard of this game? It sounds phenomenal. I haven't had a chance to play it. It's supposedly very complex, but the idea is you play through the game and everybody dies. And then you go back and start again, and you try to deduce what happened that caused everybody to die, and you try to change things before they end up killing everybody. And then if you fail, you go back to the start again. And it's this deduction game where you get more information each time, but each time leads to your demise, but each time you're getting closer to preventing it. It sounds really like a fascinating concept. So I'm dying to get my hands on that. And that just came out. It was a big hit at Gen Con, I believe, and Dragon Con. I was hearing people talk about it.
So was Jennifer Aniston. She's the biggest hit at Gen Con.
Jennifer Lopez, was she there? No?
Hennifer Lopez. And yes, I've been sitting on that Gen Con joke for 3 weeks now. And yeah, it totally
worth
still
it.
Works.
Worth
yeah, still,
it.
still
worth
plays. It. If you don't, by the way, DLC listeners, if you don't listen to Jeff Cannata and Anthony Carboni's podcast, We Have Concerns, people often listen to this show and they're like, Christian, I thought you were a comic. One, talking about video games, I'm not trying to make stand 'em up jokes for you. Come to a show, you can hear stand 'em up jokes. Two, if you think Jeff Cannata is funny, listen to We Have Concerns and listen to the dumb jokes he drops on that, where Anthony has now limited him to one per episode. So if you guys are going to give me any butt busting for my dumb jokes on DLC, Jeff Cannata, you cannot be one of those people. You cannot be one of those people.
I learned it by watching you.
No, you didn't. No, you did not, good sir. You've had that in you since the day I met you.
that's not wrong. All right, anything else you guys wanted to bring up? Or should we wrap this puppy up? Any last bits of gaming? Andrew, it's so good to talk to you. I'm so happy.
Yeah, I'm so glad that I could finally reunite with you guys and have, you know, something cool to talk about. Also, I should before we finish, I should plug my game URL. So it is on Kickstarter. So you can search for Divorce. There aren't that many divorce related things on Kickstarter, so it's pretty easy to find. Or you can go to divorcegame.com, and that'll take you there too.
That's awesome. I urge people to check it out. It sounds great. I can't wait to play it. Are you all in on game designer, or do you have a side gig as well?
Definitely going all in on this. Hopefully the campaign does well enough where, you know, I would like to make it a full-time gig in the future, but for now, I'm just really focusing on giving this game like 100% of my attention, and if people enjoy it, then we'll see where it goes from there.
That is so awesome. That is a dude who is following his dream. So I hope you guys take a second and check it out
and
hopefully support him. Yeah, exactly. awesome. And we'll stick around for a second. Folks, we'll be giving you a parting gift at the end of this episode. But for now, Andrew, any other plugs you wanted to do other than your game in your Twitter, for example?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. It's a hard thing to spell. It's S-C-X-V-O-R. It's named after a Pokemon. Forgive me. You can follow me on Twitter there. Otherwise, you know, I'm sure I'm just blanking on the spot. This is why Oscar acceptance speeches go on forever, because it's like really hard to think of stuff like that unless you write it down. But yeah, just, you know, thanks for having me on the show, you guys. And hopefully we'll be able to hang out soon in real life.
Yeah, absolutely. Christian, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
Dude, this Thursday's improv versus stand-up at UCB. If you're anywhere near LA, holy crap. I am so stupidly excited for this show. Doing improv is Phil Jackson. No, not the great basketball coach, the amazing improviser who has spent years in New York, and he did the show when we were out there for the Del Close Marathon.
And but strangely, he also does improv in the triangle offense, which is... Well,
only in the triangle.
Yeah, and, it's a weird coincidence.
It's great. It's his time in Chicago, where he trained in Chicago before, then now he's training in LA. No, Phil Jackson and him and Colton Dunn, who is a writer on the Peabody Award-winning and maybe the best sketch show of all time? Oh, it's good. Key and Peele. So Colton and Phil are doing improv and doing stand-up. We have Maria Bamford, who is a god. I adore her so much. I love her so much. Jonah Ray, love, love, love. And Andy Haynes. All love. I geeked out when this lineup came together. And that show's Thursday in LA at UCB if you're around. I think there are still a few tickets available. If not, if it sells out, when it sells out. Guest list. I wish I had a huge, I wish I could give everybody in. Wait list usually gets in if you get there early and sign up for that. But anyway, I'm basically, now I'm pulling Andrew Yoon. I'm just bragging about this show that I'm a part of because it's so amazing. It's going to be so great. And then I do this video game show that I'm really proud of called DLC, and it's a podcast. And if you're proud of it too, you can leave it a review on iTunes and you can tell your friends about it. It seems like a silly thing that Jeff and I sit around every week with friends and talk about video games, but I think we put a decent amount of work into it, and I'm really proud of how the show comes out. And if you like it too, you can tell friends and leave a review.
Hear, hear. Yeah, we love getting your feedback on the show. You can do it a number of ways, as the aforementioned iTunes review. That is super helpful. Also, dlcfeedback@gmail.com is a email address you can use to send us comments. Or use the Twitter. I'm on Twitter @JeffCanada. That's with two N's and one T. I hope you check out We Have Concerns, as Christian mentioned. It's a show that is different from this, but I think you'll dig it. It won't take up too much of your time, and I think it'll make you think and make you laugh. WeHaveConcerns.com is where you go for that. Also, the /Filmcast over at /Film.com. I do movie reviews there. That is going to do it for this episode. But before we go, we like to leave you with a parting gift. So, Andrew, what kind of parting gift would you like to leave for the people?
I had the immense pleasure of taking the Amtrak from Seattle to Los Angeles after PAX. It is such a beautiful ride. And yeah, it's a 36-hour ride. You know, it's not the fastest way of getting around, but it is so beautiful, and I really needed it after the insanity of PAX. It just, the views are incredible, and just, it's super romantic being on a train and just like looking at the views and just writing stuff and just thinking and having all that time to yourself. So if you haven't done that yet, I would highly recommend it. It's so much fun. It's so much better than flying. It's amazing. Another train related thing I want to plug is a movie called Snowpiercer, mm-hmm. which is about another beautiful train ride, except if you're in the back of the train, you're in incredible poverty. So it's about this one man's journey to get to the front of the train. And it's such a cool sci-fi movie that's beautiful and has Tilda Swinton, and just it's so cool. It's a Korean film, so it's a little, you know, quirky, to say the least. And if you're a big fan of like Old Boy, for example, I think you'd really enjoy checking out Snowpiercer. It's on demand on like Vudu, so you can check it out on your Xbox or PS3 or whatever. And yeah, so those are my parting gifts.
Yeah, if you I mentioned the Slash Filmcast. We did a review of Snowpiercer. So if you're still on the fence after Andrew's endorsement, check out our review too. It's a very interesting, cool film. I described it as BioShock the movie on a train.
That's a perfect way of describing it. I didn't even think about it, but now that you said that, it completely clicks. That is the best way of summing it up. Yeah.
Christian, what's your parting gift?
I know I'm late to the party, but with the series ending soon, I have jumped on Boardwalk Empire, and I'm in season two. And if you are looking for a new show to watch that you can binge on, I am thoroughly enjoying Boardwalk Empire, which is set during a Prohibition Atlantic City. So that is what I would suggest checking out if you're looking for a new show to binge.
I also got a new show to binge for you. It's a sort of a high five to my buddy Christian because we, this weekend, we're all talking about Friday Night Lights because Christian actually took his fam and went to an actual Friday Night Lights high school football game. I wish I could have joined. But if there's anybody on this planet, Garnett Lee, who hasn't seen Friday Night Lights, please rectify that situation. It is one of the best shows about good people doing good things that'll make you smile and make you happy for the world and also entertain you and give you drama and give you excitement. Even if you don't like football, don't care for sports, one iota, this show is one of the greatest series in the history of television, and it ends with one of the greatest finales ever. It is inspiring and wonderful, and Clear Eyes, Full Hearts, Can't Lose. It's great. Right now the chat room is exploding because they realize Garnett hasn't seen Friday Night Lights. Yeah, that's how we reacted too. Anyway, that's going to do it for this week's edition of DLC. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll be back next Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific time. Come hang out with us then. But until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.